has announced the cancellation of all spring 2021 public in-person performances. Krannert Center thanks you for your steadfast support and invites you to visit krannertcenter.com for updates on virtual programming and other news.
The first thing, as a Wefty, always encouraging people to support this amazing radio station, local radio station, alternative radio station. That means that you'll get information, you'll get news, you'll get music from this radio station that you don't typically hear on your commercial radio stations that are driven by ads and business and promotions. So WEFT is now at 100% power. That's right. With the help of many volunteers and supporters, the FCC has licensed WEFT for full power at our new antenna height. Now transmitting at 290 feet, WEFT welcomes the communities of Paxton, Buckley, and Onarga to our listening area. Our loyal listeners will only notice small changes in the coverage area and may need to reposition their antennas slightly in order to receive our signal. A big thank you to all of those who support and have supported WEFT over 39 years of community broadcasting. This is what we need. We got to hold on to these types of jewels. So please be sure to support WEFT.
And programming at WEFT is brought to you by Common Ground Food Co-op. Common Ground is making some changes to their hours, and their departments will affect shoppers. For more information, please visit commonground.coop. And remember, we're all in this together. Good words, good advice.
Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial. Last week, we had an interesting communication with Australia, where some of our prints are being exhibited in a very nice gallery. Very exciting. The gallery opened on Thursday with 35 people. And we have pictures of the gallery as it's set up. And it's interesting that a gallery so far away can be inspiring us to do things here. I'm not sure that directors of galleries realize that they have often a very strong influence on their clients. This is not a huge gallery, so you can't have 6 foot long pictures. Our size of picture is pretty reasonable. And they are organizing them so that pictures with different colors and backgrounds are put together. And that's the first time I've seen that sort of arrangement. We really don't have room to do that sort of display. And there's a range of different prints. Chris and the director is Jacinta, and husband is Chris. He's the one that prepared the walls, nicely muted white, and he's also a farmer, and I have an agriculture degree, so we talked a little bit. And we might have to do an interview again, just because we needed it shorter, and we ended up putting an interview out on the air here. So I did get some responses from people who had listened or knew that this was inspiring us to do things with our pictures here. We do have a storefront and could do that. We also sent some rime ice pictures done by Laura Martin Rickler in Monticello, and she'd sent them to me, and I asked her if I could show those to the Australians, because the Australians at the moment are in the middle of the height of summer and it's hot, hot, hot. It's kind of fun to send them a picture of ice and snow. And there are also pictures that are rather interesting in that if you see the stems of trees that have lost their rime ice are very dark and the leaves are still intact. So you have a contrast of black and white, and that's sort of what we do. We do that and we allow people to have an imagination of what it's like to be on one of our trails. The trail is at Monticello. It goes across the Sangamon River. It's called the Sangamon Bridge Trail. And it's a rail bed that we bought with trails in mind. We went looking for funds. Monticello wasn't really into providing funds, but once we got the bed by raising community money, there was the concept of putting in a trail. And they spent probably well over $100,000 to put in a trail on the railroad bed across our truss bridge. We still own the land. They have an easement. And it was a little controversial because they also wanted a road cut. And a road cut, the Nature Preserves Commission and other people who handle the jurisdiction of natural areas know road cuts very well. All sorts of subdivisions like to have access to the nearby road. So, bless me, without any contact with Heartland Pathways, there was a big billboard with developmental signs that said there would be a road cut. So I started to look into this and ask questions. And we were accused of delaying the railroad bit because, being rather clever, the city decided that the trail would now be associated with a road cut and a subdevelopment. We were into trails, not necessarily subdevelopments, and we really didn't want a road cut because we'd found a rattlesnake. A rattlesnake had been run over, but the rattlesnakes are eastern Massasauga rattles, and they're on the west side, on the east side of Allerton Park, the natural history side, and so they're native to the area. But we haven't exactly found a living rattlesnake. We've found other snakes. In fact, if you do landscaping and you put in a net to hold the topsoil, then sometimes the snakes can get caught in that. It goes around them like you would round the gills of a fish. But then when they're found, they get exterminated. And so the rattlesnake that was found had been run over by a tractor. But that was, the intent was to have the rattlesnakes be able to move towards the river. They like to have moisture. And from experience, it's found that if you put in a road cut, they get very shy about that, so you've blocked the habitat. So we did some back and forth about that. We went to Illinois Nature Preserves Commission, and it was like, uh-huh, yes, we know about road cuts. And they do stop the linear movement of animals along the corridor. But eventually it was decided that this new subdivision needed ambulances and fire trucks to be able to get out to the road quickly. Well, they had another road, County Farm Road, which they could move on, but This was the tack in order to get quick access to Old 47 and then on to Bridge Road and on to 72 as an expressway, and you could get into Champaign in about 25 minutes. So that was a little faster than using the Wiggle Woggle Road, which is near the river. Eventually, we were going to be taken to court, and even if we were to ask questions, it was going to cost us $15,000. Wow, we didn't have $15,000. So eventually we gave in, and the trail got put in. It was rather wonderful. It went from the sewage treatment plant at Monticello, where there's a railroad Y. The Railroad Museum bought 7 miles of the same corridor, and they had a Y. A Y is where you have a triangle so that you can take a train up one side, down the other side, and you can turn the train around. So for passenger trains especially, it's nice to have the engine in the front. An engine can be back and then guy can push, but it just doesn't look right. So to have a Y at that end and a Y 3 miles away is helpful. But the line is active to the Cirrus treatment plant, and it was created with local involvement. We convinced them to keep a narrow trail, no more than 8 feet, and with very little mowing of the downside. In this case, we were going to go across the Sangamon River, so the trees were bottomland trees, and they were growing almost right up to the trail. So in railroading days, they would cut the trees back a little, but not too much. Railroad lines poke their way through a bundle of trees as long as there's an easement, maybe 25 feet to have a tree on either side. But it costs to remove trees, and it also reduces the ambiance for either passenger trains or freight trains. We had to do some research. We wanted to know if the grain at Cisco needed to come back to Top Flight in Bement. Bement is about 8 miles south of Monticello, and it's the headquarters of Top Flight Grain, which meets there a Wabash line or a east-west line, I think now owned by Norfolk Southern. The movement of trains is important to know about, because some of the money that comes for trails comes from the Rail Banking Act, and they want to have continuity and contiguity and connection. So you don't get financial support for a rail trail if the corridor is cut in two, and in 200 years you want to have that railroad back, which is part of the Rail Banking Act, then you wouldn't be able to do it. So we didn't have that sort of support, but Monticello wanted to do it, and did it without the apron strings of that would make sure that the trail was recreationally wide and like 10 feet or more, with riprap down the embankments and things like that. Well, when you have a trail, you just don't put it in and leave it. One Halloween or nearby, the youth that used to occupy the forest and smoke a joint occasionally and have a tent and a club accidentally set fire to the approach trestle. Approach trestles are rather expensive. So, and that was kind of fun, because in order to stop vehicles from moving along this trail, two blocks of 8 foot by 3 foot pieces of concrete were placed at either end. And so this fire burned a segment of the approach trestle. And that cost about, at least I would think, about $100,000 to replace. So it was replaced. I'm not quite sure what happened to the children, but I think they got frightened out of their wits and at least would probably not run around with matches anymore. But these trails need to be watched. And trees will grow onto the trails. If it's concrete, they'll lift the trail up. And so that becomes a tripper and that becomes a liability. If it's a tree like a walnut that drops nuts all over the bed, then people can trip on a walnut. Or bigger yet, if you have a Osage orange, a tree adjacent, and it drops in the fall a whole bunch of hedge apples, that's a problem too. Then when you get off the approach trestle, you have to have a fence line, because the youth especially would use the truss bridge for a diving board. It's a little bit dangerous because the water may be higher at flood time, but it may be low at middle summer. But it would happen, and no matter how many notices you put up, it would happen. So there's a substantial fence built locally, and it has enough wire on it that you can look through it or over it at the Sangamon River, which is doing its natural thing. And it does have along one side of it a levee. These areas had a little pieces of farmland that could be created. What you did was you took a swampland, you put in a levee between you and the river, and then you had a pump. It was usually an Archimedes pump. It was like a circular tube where the water went up gradually and went out. It would pump slowly, and you could get a horse in there and have a little patch of corn. And these days that does not work anymore, because the equipment that goes into making a farmland is too serious. It's large, and this little plot of land would have been too small. So we had a fence, and we do have a trail that can go down to the levee, and people can watch the levee and see how the bottom lands work and how the river meanders. And quite nice. And the trail got used, and it was popular. So it joins Old Town Monticello with the subdivisions on the other side of the river. So our truss bridge, we have three truss bridges, and this is one of them. And it allows you to get to that subdevelopment that we were notified about after the fact, before we were asked if we wanted to have a road cut. Well, we have the trail and we have the road cut. And by popular demand, the trail has been extended by another mile around to Applewood, which is where the library has been moved to. You have to know there was a lot of debate about the library. Do you leave it in Old Town, where everyone has been to and where you can get to it with a bicycle? Or do you put it on the outer suburbs, where you almost have to have a car, or now that we have a trail, you can get there by bicycle? Well, we still have 4 miles that goes between Applewood is the road cut to Wildcat Creek, and that's on Old 47. You have to know that the roads follow the railroads. There were no roads accompanying the first railroads. The railroads brought settlers to town. The roads came later. The roads were kind of muddy. They were always parallel, invariably parallel to the railroad. So we have the potential to put in 4 miles of railbed trail to Cisco. One of the things we have there is we have some remnant prairie. When you go across the bottomlands, you're dealing with forest. When you get onto the uplands and the flatlands, you get to be adjacent to what was prairie. And there are little elements of remnant prairie. They're not the world's greatest remnants of prairie, but they are the only ones we have locally. And a rattlesnake was found there. A rattlesnake was dead, but it was there. So that qualified that 4 miles as a unique ecological site and deserving of preservation. In the middle of that 4 miles, there was a farm settlement. It had a barn and a machinery shed, which was open in old style. So you could back your horse up and put the machine away, but it was protected from the rain. There were administrative buildings and two houses. One was a corn country cube, and one was a prairie house, which is like you have two stories facing the road and then a kitchen and out the back. Sometimes the kitchen was so separate, because if you have a hot climate, a kitchen in the house can make the house very steamy and humid and warm in the summer. So you often had a kitchen that was separate. Those houses have been gone, and the barn has been taken down, and there was also an elevator. This farm settlement was put in by Sam Allerton. Sam Allerton was providing the Civil War with hogs and other foods to keep the Union Army afloat. And he was rewarded for doing that. He was paid for providing food for the Army. And he bought land in various places. One of them is Allerton near Broadlands, almost over towards Vermilion County. Other plots were in Iowa and other places. He bought this, I would assume, a couple thousand acres of ground about 3-4 miles from Monticello, and it's a favorite place for Monticello to go. It's also a favorite place for other communities to go, like Champaign-Urbana or Danville or Decatur or Clinton or Arcola. This is a very nicely used natural area. So our railroad bed, our 4 miles, runs through this little historic enclave with its elevator. Disappointingly, the administration of Allerton Park has changed. It used to be in charge of South Farms, was considered an adjunct farm to the university, and the university had been donated the park. Sam's son had it as a retreat, built Allerton House and a large pond, and he had areas that didn't have any forest, so you didn't get confused about not being able to see the trees for being in them. And it's a wonderful site, and it has sculptured gardens, and John Allerton was knowledgeable enough about the park and art and sculptures and went to Europe and brought back sculpted pieces that are dotted around the park. So this is an interesting place to go. There is land for cultivation, and that was what was administered by the farm manager of the university. Eventually they decided to lease that out. So that land is rented to farmers who work with it. The elevator is there, but there's probably about a good acre of ground where the administrative barns were, plus the elevator. The elevator was a tall wooden elevator, very historic, huge beams that we could never replace again. And I just got the impression that Allerton felt like they owned this elevator. It was on Heartland Pathways ground. They paid us rental for the land for many years, then stopped paying us, and I could never find out how to rectify that. But then I got the impression that really Allerton Park didn't need an elevator anymore, and it was a liability. So whether by accident or benign neglect or by willful movement, the elevator was burned down. That was a sorry day for us. At about the same time, the Railroad Museum nearby was trying to acquire an elevator to put it in as part of our history. Here we had one, but it was tall, and it had a nice little elevator in it, one-person elevator that could go up to the sky and move the gear heads around so that you could load different bins in the elevator. If you are on soft glacial tall the soil and you load one bin and leave the others empty, then the old wooden elevators would likely roll over because it's loaded on one side. So you had to be careful about how you work with these. When you got more crop and you had hybrid corns and things like that, you needed more space. So two concrete elevators were put in. Well, I got a call one day and the elevator was burning. And by the time I got there, it was gone. And that's very easy to take out your monuments like that. But it saved the problem of liability. It was the same with two radio antennas that were on Allerton Park ground. The antennas were a four-point antenna. That means they had a pedestal to sit on and went up high. Modern radio antenna are point, and they have guy wires that keep a higher aerial afloat. So this was obsolete. And being interested in this general area, we asked if we could use the administrative house, which was where the broadcast would be checked out. And that too was dropped for liability. And I was there when the person who put the aerial up, the old four-point aerial up. He and his wife had done that in their honeymoon. And now they were still working with their elevators because they can be used in fire control for people, especially in the West, to control fires. We've gotten to realize that you don't do that too much anymore. You need controlled burns so that plants and trees that have been used to being burned don't accumulate a whole bunch of litter and then have a burn which is very serious and more than just a scudding fire under the canopy. It takes out the canopy and actually is very deleterious and burns houses by the thousand. So, but this gentleman was aware that people were using these things for observation, and I wanted that too. I had crawled up this elevator with a Bell and Hall camera and taken the photographs of the Sangamon as it went through Allerton Park in the fall, and the bottomland trees were still green and the upland trees were in their fall colors. So you could have put a floor on various levels of this antenna and dock off the top. You don't need to be way up there, but you could get up high enough for an observation deck, and we still need that sort of thing. Not so much. You can get a camera on a little plane and send it round, so you don't need to climb up. But there's a difference between climbing up to a visual point. You may not have the technology of a small plane that can run around and tell you what you're looking at. This was somewhat in the day before there was an internet, and you could take a Google Earth and look at a map of the river. So things have changed, but between the elevator and the antenna, we lost two rather historic and practical pieces of equipment. It's changing. Some people have gotten to realize that as generations go along, the younger generation is not going to have nearly as much opportunity to go to native areas and natural areas as did their grandparents. So they're interested, and so land trust that was run by Bruce Hannon and Diana Glosser and others has bought about 60 acres of the sort of levee situation that we talked about before. And that is adjacent to a rookery for birds. And so Allerton is getting a lot of attention at the moment. And Allerton farmland is adjacent to our railroad bed, which has a minimum of prairie, but it's the only prairie we have. So I am looking at, and others are looking at too, the way you can bicycle through Allerton Park or down highways or back roads. You probably have to have shared roads. That means you have to have transportation people who are aware that a bicycle exists and that care should be taken. So next to our truss bridge and 2 miles of railroad bed, we have a wonderful Allerton Park and a road, old 47, that goes into Decatur. And it has on either side of it a roadside prairie, and it's adjacent to the railroad, so it augments the railroad. So what can we do? Recreation always dominates over preservation. People want trails and exercise and It's not the realization that there's a genetics there, a gene pool, and we need to save it. We run around the world picking up remnant plants and bring them back to so we can do research on them and develop them as food crops. And we should likewise have an ecosystem that other people around the world can come and sample for something that they might like too, or we may need in the 200 years time, we may be needing a biochemical to fight a disease like a virus that we don't know about now. So it behooves us to save some of this stuff. That means that people have to understand and appreciate what a prairie is. For six generations, people have been removing the prairie, and it's often the plants are called weeds, warts, curses, or banes, because the prairie had to be eliminated in order to carry out agriculture. Firstly, livestock, but then row crops. And the row crops sneak up to the railroad bed and sometimes invade a little bit if they're not noticed. But sometimes there are people who are agronomy people or people who are agricultural farm stewards are very aware of this. There's a possibility that we would like to have a perennial soybean. You might have to get that soybean from somewhere around the world, or you might adapt something like Illinois bundleweed for a new crop that would be perennial. That would save you digging the land up every year and sending excess soil, eroded soil down the river along with nitrogen and phosphorus and herbicides and what have you. So we're interested in preserving the genetics. That means that you have to have a rail trail that is not going to destroy the prairie that you have left. When you get money for a rail trail that's recreational, it's invariably wide. It is logically designed for ADA, American Disability Association, and its EPA wants trails that have, if you have a ballast, they want to have the ballast protected from what might be left over creosote. So you have a wide trail and no prairie left. If you can have a narrow trail, you still have to have maintenance, because prairie plants are tall and they fall over a trail. So you can leave the trail fallen over and people can rub their bodies against a big blue stem or a compass plant and realize how tough and rugged they are, and that they can handle drought, because in summertime we don't have a lot of rain. We have rain in the spring and rain in the fall and no rain in the middle. It's changing as climate is changing. So we don't know, but we need that prairie on the edge. So the next step is to create a plan. And the plan needs to be regional. We've talked about this quite a bit. It needs to let us know how we can connect rail trails for recreation, but it also needs to preserve little elements of remnant prairie so that the bird that is here can fly to there, and the butterfly can do the same, and the ground squirrel can do the same. And the parallel railroad line is not the best because you can put a fox at one end and it can run along the railroad bed and pick up all the animals it likes. So this is not ideal, but we don't have any ideal left. In some states like Kansas, they have a Manhattan prairie that's several thousand of acres. And that sort of volume means that the fox cannot control the whole lot. You could even have room for bison and the like, but we don't have that. But we do have rail trails, and they can create connectivity. In Monticello, you add the Allerton Park to Lodge Park to Shady Rest. These are three natural areas that have a wonderful expression of nature throughout the year, but especially in the spring. How do we connect these? How do we connect to a trail coming through from Bloomington and one coming through from Clinton? How do we get this into action? Well, let's examine the situation. Dave, you need a trail so that people will know what a prairie is. Okay, we know, let's put some money into a trail, but let it be a narrow one so that we can have people understand the prairie and appreciate it. As of yet, I'm not sure that there's enough realization of the value of the genetics of this corridor that we can go in and make a trail that will stay a trail. As always, the people who would like to have an area where they can zoom around with motorcycles. There needs to be maintenance. Do we have enough money for maintenance? Do we have a CEO, a person who is knowledgeable about these things that could answer the question of Ameren would like to go down the ballast with a 5-inch pipe to take gas from Monticello to Cisco. So we're in a discussion about that. You need some people who have a general idea of the projects, how they can connect, but also how you can maintain their originality. In some cases, you can plant. So Fran Hardy, who's a Nature Conservancy person and very much involved, worked with the university and created a 1 mile by 66 feet of construction prairie. Now, construction prairie is not the same as a remnant prairie. A remnant prairie is one that's been around for years and years. It started to come in with the retreat of glaciation when the world warmed some. So some of those plants have found niches over many years. Some of them were disturbed when the railroad went through. The railroads were given money to put in a railroad, but also to put in intermittent towns. So they had tracts of land which they could subdivide for development. Okay, but when the railroads put in and the right of way is 100 foot wide, then the ballast is in the middle and it's no more than about 10 feet wide. Legally, it can be 25 feet wide, but there are various regulations for different degrees of traffic. If you're going to be doing one train a month, then it's different from being on a main line with 10 trains a day. And the condition of the rails can be modest. We have that possibility of taking a trail back into Monticello and down to Topsite. adjacent to that is this planning that is artificial, but it's good. It utilizes some of the rough and tough species of a prairie, with grasses being sown in first and then plants being transplanted in. So within 10 years or 12 years, the artificial prairie becomes pretty much a natural prairie, and it's designed to invite the rattlesnakes in if they're there. We haven't found any yet, but the space is there, and actually the university has increased the space. We've lost the Sam Allerton enclave, but we know about the power lines that are on it as easements. We have to work with Ameren, which used to be Illinois Power, and these power lines have to be freed of what we call crud trees. They're invasive trees that have taken advantage. There were very few trees on the prairie. Our main one was cottonwood. It had to deep root into the aquifer and survived. Unfortunately, the Department of Conservation, as it was at the time, invited in or brought in autumn olives, the aim being to provide olives for birds as a bird strip, as a bird food. Well, nobody quarantined it and checked it out to see what it was going to do, and the birds loved it, and guess what? The birds have moved it all around the Midwest. So now we have this tremendous weed tree, and we do have it on the railroad line that's next to the mile of artificial prairie. But we have to remove that tree fairly frequently because it can change the soil pH, or the acidity of the soil, and it can deny the prairie plants that are underneath. So every once in a while, when we get energetic and have time and money, we will remove the tree and spot herbicide the stump and eliminate that shading. It can be autumn olives, it can be also plum trees or maples or ash. They all could be there. So we have a lot to do with that rail trail. Every once in a while, we could be criticized for having a nightmare of trees along there. It's admitted, but we're still jealous of that corridor. That means we need to perhaps, that would be a logical one to start restoring. And then you need to have a plan of what you want to do. Then you have to go for money that would help it. There is money. People want these sorts of places. They do want the exercise. So in the long run, you would anticipate that this corridor could go into the Piatt County Forest Preserve, or it could go to Allerton Park, or it could stay. So if it's going to stay and you're going to have a board, then you have to have a board that will take it off in probably other generations, because we don't have the feeling for it at the moment, except for recreation. So we're hoping that the prairie will get some qualification here. So I've been thinking about all these things because I was sent a picture of the rail trail in its snow, and I sent that off to Australia, and the Australians realized that's a wonderful picture. It's rye mice, and it just might go on the wall. Interesting that the gallery director is actually activating some of our thoughts and actions. And we need people. We need young people. We need retirees, but we essentially need young people to carry this through to many generations. And they can join Heartland Pathways as it exists, or they can take it off in their own direction. So you don't want to stultify people by telling them what to do. We've done that with Grand Prairie Friends. We spent about 10 years instigating the Grand Prairie Friends and had a lot of legal discussion about whether I should be on the board. And I said, no, I don't think we would need to be breathing down any board's neck. We want them to do their own thing. So I didn't join, but I'm a little sorry I didn't stay there with the board. It created itself. It really only knows that it started at that point, but it took years to get to that point. I think if we were to go with Heartland Pathways, we would want to have one or two people who have been around for a while who can work with this thing. It's not the only thing. Some of our territory goes from Whiteheath through to Clinton. 5 miles of this trail could join two state parks, Clinton Reservoir and Weldon Springs State Park. There's the potential of going down to Shady Rest, across the Sangamon, across Madden Creek, and up to Lodge, and joining an existing active line that goes down to Monticello. So with a little pizzazz, you could work with the Railroad Museum to have a circuit, a restaurant circuit on the rail. You could have a Chautauqua at that Shady Rest. The imagination is wonderful. So we're working at that, but we need some regional planning. This trail of Heartland Pathways goes through Lodge, DeLand, Weldon, Lane, and into Clinton. But it's not too far away from Mansfield, which is another trail that goes to Bloomington. And it's the pieces of it are loaded with prairie. So how do we get people to look at this region and look for its trails, to know how you get through Champaign-Urbana to the Kickapoo Trail and into Danville? Yeah. How you would get historic trains into Champaign from the Railroad Museum? These are all questions that need overall planning. So we look for planners and artists and recreators and agriculturalists to all get together, and they all have different experiences. So that's where a CEO comes in, a person to work with all these populations. And it takes years, sometimes takes 100 years. Sometimes it can happen tomorrow. So with a little bit of luck, we will do something in that area, and it relates strangely to Australia and a 25-mile trail that's on a railroad bed that goes from Albury and Wodonga up to the Mount Kosciuszko. And it's a wonderful bike ride, but it needs adjunct space for interesting things to happen, little trails that go off to the left and the right. You will want people who will want to exercise A to B and do it quickly. You will want people who will take 8 hours to get to the same destination and find the little places for a set aside or a swimming pool or something else. It's interesting to have those two relationships and to be dreaming about the possibility of taking people from here, from rail trails here, to Australia, and people from Australia to come here. That happens intermittently, but it is something that could happen. Everything has been put on hold by the virus, but we hope that too with judicious vaccination that will solve that. One of our questions from coming from the Albury side is what do I think we can do in the Albury area? Well, one of them is to look at that railroad bid. Another one is a counterpart of the big dig we have on Second Street to capture water and prevent the campus town from being flooded. Albury has the same sort of set aside vacant oxbow lakes that are on a major river, the Murray River, and they do have visitor centers and demonstration places that would be nice to be a part of. So there, you saw it last week, you're seeing it this week. We're looking at both ends in two countries, and we're rather excited and pleased with the gallery, and we might be doing some different things here as a result. So this is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial. And please be careful out there. Stay inside as you can. Wear your mask. There are some towns that don't wear masks. That's a no-no. Some towns that do wear masks because they've had a factory nearby and they've had deaths as a result. So this is WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial. And we really have to thank WEFT for its involvement in this sort of programming. And Urbana Public Television, who comes and photographs it and then puts it up on Channel 6 as a video program. We add pictures and put it in a video program, and then it goes up on YouTube. So in a week or so, or even perhaps sooner, you can find this program, today's program, up on YouTube. We won't have added pictures because that takes a lot of talent. But you could be better understood my conversation if I could put in maps, and we do have them. It just takes a lot of technological energy to do that. So thank you. WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
Listening to a radio station where the mighty host of heaven sing.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on. If you want to hear the songs of Zion coming from the land of the endless spring.
Hi, this is Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, and you're listening to 90.1 FM Champaign, WEFT.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Minuteman Press. For a few special invitations printed or thousands of full-color flyers, Minuteman Press can help get it done on time and in budget. They offer an extensive line of products as well as design services. Due to COVID-19, please contact Minuteman Press for safe ordering, pickup, and delivery options. Phone 217-355-0550. They are located at 905 South Neal Street in Champaign or champaignprinting.com.
COVID-19 testing is open to all. COVID-19 testing is available at Marketplace Shopping Center in Champaign. It's a free service that can be obtained without a doctor's referral, code, or appointment. Testing site is located at 2000 North Neal Street in Champaign in the parking lot on the east side of the mall. Enter through the South Mall entrance off of Market Street. It's from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., 7 days a week, while daily supplies last. Tests are now available for anyone, including individuals walking up to the site, and there is no limit to the numbers of tests one person is allowed to take. As we move through the Restore Illinois plan to a full reopening of the state, testing will be crucial to identifying new cases and taking immediate action to prevent additional spread. The test is quick and painless with a 10 to 15 second swab inside of each